And this is the beginning of the live broadcast day for Free Radio Santa Cruz. Monday, June 29, 2015. And this is the Mideast Migraines Program, the Monday edition. I am your friendly local neighborhood Palestinian American, Ren Tawil. If I didn't already say my name already, I'm just full of redundancies today, aren't I? Well, maybe not. Folks, I'm going to talk about the Gaza Strip today, although from an angle actually originating outside the Gaza Strip. Here's the situation. Now, my longtime listeners will know that, may recall, that I, in August of 2008, participated in the first non-military voyages into the Gaza Strip from outside the Gaza Strip, the first such voyages in 41 years, because ever since 1967, the Gaza Strip has been occupied, and consistently so, even to this day, actually, occupied by the State of Israel. And for that matter, I do not even know if Israel ever sent their own naval vessels into Gaza City or anywhere else along the Gazan coastline there for any reason, but certainly no commercial vessels, no aid vessels, no vessels from other Arab countries or any other country in the world. Gaza Strip has been effectively, for the most part, closed off from 1967, closed off to the world from 67 until 2006. And, or I should say, effectively closed off from the world from 67 up until the present moment. And when Hamas came into power, the government of the Palestinian people in Gaza, it became even a tighter grip over who can go in and out. And for all the complaints that Israel has had about missiles flying out of the Gaza Strip into its own territory, they've done nothing but make the situation worse, Israel has, by squeezing the life, quite literally, out of Gazan society, dismissing the Hamas government as nothing more than a terrorist organization, when Hamas is, in fact, the government of Hamas is the elected, freely elected representative of the Palestinians in the Strip. So we sailed in the summer of 08, two refurbished Greek fishing vessels, under constant threat, under the multiply pronounced threat by the Israeli government and its navy, its so-called defense forces, that they would stop us from doing so, even though our vessels were open to inspection at the port of Larnaca, beginning at the port of Larnaca, Cyprus, so they could have seen for themselves if we were going to include in the cargo holds anything lethal against the people of Israel, any kind of weaponry, anything that could possibly threaten Israel. There were no open delegations of Israelis who came to inspect, although we announced to the world that the boats were open to inspection. by any properly certified inspection party. Of course, we, the Free Gaza Movement, had to be particularly careful and employ the Coast Guard and authorities of the Greek Cypriot government to help us guard against the possibility of sabotage by the Israelis. And Israel does have a history of sabotaging and, in the course of such, murder against those who want to sail into any part of Israel or Palestine for the sake of the Palestinian people, without necessarily jumping through all the hoops that Israel would require of us. They blew up a ship in 1988, the Israelis did, that was destined to Haifa and to the Palestinian people, the so-called Israeli Arabs of Israel. Just last year, quite obviously, it was Israel which tried to blow up and sabotage, did succeed in detonating a charge, a mine of sorts, on a boat, completely refurbished local Gazan boat that was just about to be christened and sent off on a journey. They waited until the last moment, not doing us any great favor. They waited until the last moment, as far as I'm concerned, so that they could dishearten the people who live in the Gaza Strip. People, all this work, thousands of man hours, all this money going into the project, and then boom. So we already knew that Israel has this horrible history of sabotage and violence towards any effort of the Gazans to maintain their own civil life, their own economy, and so we were on our way. At the last moment, Israel relented and said, no, we're not going to stop you. And the only reason why they did that was because pressure came to bear against Israel by the global community of peaceniks and those who saw no practical reason for Israel to stop this human rights endeavor. Some would call it a humanitarian endeavor. To sail into the port of Gaza to bring literally next to nothing in terms of an actual cargo, replacement parts or food. We did have a lot of bottles of water, frankly, left over from our trip to keep us refurbished and going, and in part to help abate seasickness. So there was water, one single cardboard box full of hearing aids, and perhaps some other medical equipment, medications, etc. A tiny fraction of a drop in the bucket to the tremendous needs of the people of the Gaza Strip at that time. And balloons saying, Free Palestine. And I think some coloring books, something else for the children. And that was pretty much it in terms of material that we actually brought in on those two boats, the SS Liberty and my boat, the SS Gaza, the larger but slower of the two boats, the Gaza was. And we stayed for about a week. The people there who were long in anticipation of our voyage announced several months before, in reality closer to a year before, came out to the tune of some 40,000 individuals, civilians, Palestinian Arabs, to the marina, if you want to call it that, a largely unused, dilapidated concrete wall that we pulled our two boats up against. 40,000 individuals cheering us, racing about a mile out from shore when we were still about a mile before docking in their small boats, just so they could say they were the first to greet us, to extend their enthusiastic welcome to us. Yes, there's no question that the announcement was made by by Hamas, their elected government, that we would be coming in. Obviously, in that small Palestinian enclave in historic Palestine, there is a lot of things have to be handled largely through the government, civil agencies, etc., the police, and so with the very restricted governmental and societal mechanisms that they have in the Gaza Strip to function, basically almost everything is done through Hamas. As democracy takes better hold in the Gaza Strip, that, of course, will change over time. So we came in, we were welcomed, we were treated, quite frankly, as heroes. A bunch of seasick, largely inept individuals who simply committed to this human rights endeavor several months before. Whereas, of course, the real heroes in this story are the Gazans themselves. In 1948, when the first expulsion of 750,000 Palestinians took place, driven from their homes, villages, and cities by Zionist, political Zionist militias, partisans, it more than doubled the population of the Gaza Strip. And then, of course, 19 years later, in 67, when Israel simply took over the Gaza Strip, supposedly in defense of an Egyptian attack, which most likely never would have occurred, just a lot of bravado going on, a lot of chest beating over water rights in the West Bank and in Israel itself, with Israel illegally extracting waters, rivers and streams whose headwaters lie in adjacent neighboring Arab states, diverting the water, effectively stealing it according to international law. Egypt, Syria, Jordan, Lebanon began making noises, a lot of noises, about it's echoing upon deaf ears in the world community about how Israel was stealing this water. And one thing led to another, and Israel took advantage of an opportunity that they had been rehearsing for close to 10 years. Military drills, strategic planning, and they took over the entire Egyptian Sinai Peninsula to the very waters of the Suez Canal. They took over what remained of historic Palestine west of the Jordan River. And they even took a small slice of Syria, called the Jolan or the Golan Heights. And and the situation in Gaza is such and continues to be such that they remain very isolated. The Israeli military guarding the land passages, the ports of entry, if you want to call that entry, 24/7, severely restricting travel into or out of the Gazan enclave. And life is still a living hell there. And it has been described as a living hell for a long time, perhaps 10 or 20 years before Hamas ever came to power. Certainly compared to the situation in the West Bank, which is now going through its own living hell. The commitment was made by those who founded the Free Gaza Movement in 2006 to do whatever it took to contact, to connect with the Palestinians in the Gaza Strip and do it by sea. Israel was clearly not going to let people go in and out of the Strip without Israel's express permission. This mechanism controlled almost entirely by its military, so-called defense forces, so-called Israeli defense forces. All these army people are doing are repressing the Palestinians who live in Gaza. And they weren't going to let us go in by land. They had years before bombed and destroyed the only quote-unquote international airport in the Gaza Strip and will not allow it to be built. And even if it was a potentially functioning airport, obviously Israel is not going to let anyone in and out of there without their express permission. Israel brags about no longer having illegal Jewish settlements. Of course, they would probably never admit that they were illegal. They brag about no longer having any Jewish settlements in the Gaza Strip and not permanently stationing any Israeli troops in Gaza. But according to the United Nations and certain provisions of agreements such as the Geneva Convention, the Gaza Strip is still considered by law to be occupied. Why? How can that be if Israel is not necessarily consistently stationing troops there? Inside the border, the troops are right on. They surround every part of the border with Israel and survey it, the entire border between Gaza and Israel, not just the ports of entry. It is considered a de facto occupation because of the restrictions, because of the fact that they are monitoring and generally saying no to most supply coming into the Gaza Strip, anything going out in terms of sellable goods, farmed food, etc., manufactured goods. Israel generally puts very tight restrictions on this, as the Israelis themselves have been noted by whistleblower Edward Snowden to have said, "We're going to put Gaza on a diet." The Israelis have said so. Their generals and their people in the government said, "We're going to put Gaza on a diet." Just trying to make life as miserable for them as they can, so they'll eventually leave and Israel can walk right back into it. That's what's going on. There are natural gas fields beneath the sea in Gazan territorial waters. And the more the Israelis can befuddle and wreck the efforts of the Gazan government to extract that natural gas from the sea and claim and utilize and financially exploit that natural resource, which does belong to the people of Gaza by law, the more Israel can mess up the aspirations of the Gazans to do that, the ever more frustrated the Palestinians will become, and they will, apparently Israel is counting on this, they will quit Gaza, the people who live there will. Perhaps go to Egypt, perhaps be slaughtered in the course of a single summer, as 2,200 of them, over 2,200 were last summer in 2014, by the Israelis. The Israelis, who over the past 15-odd years have suffered no more than 30 deaths due to missiles, rockets, and mortars coming out of the Gaza Strip and landing quite arbitrarily no practical state-of-the-art guidance to speak of, if any kind. Fewer than 30 Israelis have died in a single attack in 2012. Over 1,000 died. About 2,000 in Operation Cast Lead, December of 08, the same year I came in with the boats to January of 09, and then over 2,200 Palestinians, virtually every one of them a non-combatant, 2,200 killed by Israel. There have been several attempts since Operation Cast Lead, which ended in the first part of 2009, several more efforts for the Free Gaza Movement, FGM, to send in ships that the movement has gone to great lengths to extract the money for, to get donors backing for this project. And ever since Cast Lead, in every instance, and every one of the many instances where we tried to enter the port of Gaza, which, as far as we're concerned, as far as the United Nations is concerned, is our legal right, and it is the legal right of the Gazans to accept visits from anyone by sea that they deem as legitimate visitors, commercial or otherwise, into that port. Since Cast Lead, Israel has stopped every one of those attempts, including two major flotillas, one which included six ships. That was the instance. Now, the first flotilla had the six ships. That was in May of 2010, almost coming up to the second anniversary of the first successful voyages. And that was the instance where Israel, as it generally did with the smaller vessels and previous attempts to sail in, attacked, commandeered, kidnapped, in clearly an act of international piracy, those vessels, forced them into Israeli waters, generally the port of Ashkelon in Israel, and where it was never the intention of anyone in the Free Gaza Movement to go. They were not headed even into Israeli waters, let alone Israel itself. All boats gave a wide skirt away from Israeli waters, and these attacks, most if not every last one of them, by Israel, these acts of piracy and kidnapping, all took place in international waters. They wouldn't even let the vessels get into Gazan waters. The point being, some people might find a certain defense for not letting them get close to Gaza, but the point being is these were acts of piracy committed by Israel, which occurred in international waters, where there was no immediate question of breaching the sovereignties of any one nation, and Israel's waters would not have been forcibly breached by anyone anyway. So, okay, here I am spending, it's 24 after 3 on the Mideast Migraine Show on Free Radio Santa Cruz, and I'm nattering on and on about my experience in the Gaza Strip and all this stuff. Let us, you see, I had known for a week or so, for a few weeks, in reality, that the Freedom Flotilla 3, the third attempt of, let's see, it was four or five vessels to plow those waters again and to reach the shores of Gaza, would be happening. And just last Saturday, they began the last leg of their voyage, this flotilla of four or five boats and ships. And lo and behold, that was Saturday, 2 days ago, when that leg of the trip began. And this message was received just yesterday, Sunday, June 28. From Jane Jewell, an excellent friend of the Free Gaza Movement and the cause of peace and freedom for the Palestinians, Jane Jewell made the announcement, the Marianne, flagship of the Freedom Flotilla 3, was about 105 nautical miles from Gaza, sailing there to break the siege. That's Israel's economic and militarily enforced siege of the Gaza Strip. Sailing there to break that siege when it was attacked by the Israeli occupation forces a few hours ago. The boat with all its passengers has been taken. This occurred yesterday, folks. And here it is Monday, June 29, 2015. She says, please make phone calls to pressurize our government to demand Israel that they release them at once. Jane Jewell is British, I believe, and they tend to do funny things to words like that. Instead of saying simply to pressure our government, please make phone calls to pressurize our government to demand Israel that they release them at once. Release these kidnapped passengers and crew aboard the Marianne of Gothenburg. We're calling on your support for the passengers on board the Marianne who have just been kidnapped by Israel. They want people to call the U.S. State Department, Public Communications Department, the White House. If in California, call Senators Boxer and Feinstein and call the San Francisco Israeli Consulate. I'm not going to give the phone numbers out because I'm pretty much convinced that no one will bother taking the numbers, but if you can get these numbers yourselves, you can. I won't have to waste airtime, and you know who I'm talking about. Contact Senator Barbara Boxer, Senator Dianne Feinstein. Contact the Israeli consulate in San Francisco. I tried doing that. I tried calling the consulate a few hours ago and basically got nowhere. A lot of robo voice entities on the other line trying to direct and redirect my call, and it's just got to be a big hassle. Thank you for your immediate action. Colonel Ann Wright from the USA is on board the Marianne, Jane Jewell. Colonel Ann Wright, retired U.S. military colonel, I forget which branch, Air Force or Army, probably one of those two, has been a good friend and has been a passenger on several of the Free Gaza Movement voyages. Now, the announcement that was made here that Colonel Wright, American, was on board the Marianne, but correction was made. By my friend Deborah, who chimes in here and says, we learn Colonel Ann Wright is not on the Marianne, she is on the Rachel. This correction has been made to the previous post sent. Please help spread the word. Phone calls still needed to flow in today for passengers aboard the Marianne and for Gaza. This is a good time to tell representatives why they should help lift the deadly blockade and to hash mark stay human, serving their constituents in humanity, not Israel. Folks, even if you've never been to the Gaza Strip, even if you've had no previous knowledge of the Free Gaza Movement, nor of the situation in the Gaza Strip, there's plenty of stuff on the net about it. You go in particular to FGM or Free Gaza Movement to find out more about the whole operation. CognitiveLiberty.net, reparations.org to get the proper, truthful lowdown on that and what's happening. Cognitive liberty has its it's right up, and I'm looking for the see, there was an earlier one that I was that gave details of the flotilla. Now, here's an article that was released some days before. It's going to take a moment to get to it. Meantime, let's take a musical break. Listen to some lovely Greek oud music by a Greek American. West Coaster here.
Here at listener-sponsored radio, KPFA or KPFB in Berkeley, KFCF in Fresno, it is time for the evening news. Radio KPFA or KPFB in Berkeley, KFCF in Fresno. It is time for the evening news.
Thank you.
Is of course the oud, the associated generally with the Middle East and the Mediterranean, including Greece. You were hearing lovely playing by Greek American Mavroti Kontanis. He gave a concert a while back in a very quaint cozy atmosphere in someone's living room up in the Santa Cruz Mountains here. And so that's Greek style oud music. The oud is the instrument upon which the Europeanized lute is based. Big fat stringed mandolin could loosely be described as, recklessly described as, you listened to, you were hearing that last tune was Apone Turkala. Before that was Utataros, or the Tatar, by M.T. Quintanis, the instrumentalist, inspired by death and the dervish by Mesa Selimovic. And I think before that we were listening to track 5 here, Ushak Saz Semai, dedicated to Dr. Minir N. Beckin. The album is Wooden Heart. 2008. Lovely Greek American oud music. Okay, I'm gonna read this. The original press release for Freedom Flotilla 3, 47 participants on 4 boats sailing now. This was sent out just yesterday, and quite obviously immediately before Israel's attack on the Mariane. Freedom Flotilla 3. 47 participants on four boats. Four boats sailing now. Freedom Flotilla 3, consisting of four boats, the converted fishing trawler Marianne of Gothenburg. And these are all names of the boats that were rechristened after the boats were acquired either by FGM or other associated organizations. They rechristened and renamed these boats. The converted fishing trawler Marianne of Gothenburg, the flagship of the flotilla, and the supporting sailing vessels Rachel, Vittorio, and Giuliano II, carrying 47 people from 17 countries. Sounds a lot like my voyage 6 years ago. And has been sailing since Saturday morning Gaza time to challenge the blockade of 1.8 million Palestinians in the Gaza Strip. Our primary goal is to break the illegal and inhumane blockade of Gaza and to call an opening, to call on the opening the port of Gaza, the port of Palestine, to the world. Three sailing vessels are accompanying the Marianne, her freedom sailors and cargo on their way to Gaza. Their names, Rachel, Vittorio, and Giuliano II, were given in memory of peace activists Rachel Corey, Vittorio Aragoni, and Giuliano Mercamis. While Giuliano II also recalls the Giuliano, another boat that was about to leave port, but had to stay due to technical reasons. It is not yet clear whether this boat has been sabotaged, as happened in 2011, and this suspicious case is still under investigation. Speaking of the Giuliano, or Giuliano 1, perhaps. While the flotilla bears much needed aid, our main cargo is, as always, human solidarity and nonviolent direct action for the respective human rights. Since Saturday, the Marianne has been under surveillance by what crew described as military vessels and reconnaissance airplanes, without changing directions or plans. Currently, the Marianne is approximately 120 nautical miles. Check that. Currently, as of Saturday, June 28th, 10:40 a.m., I take that to mean Gazan time, Marianne is approximately 170 nautical miles from the port of Gaza and could reach its destination within 1 to 2 days. So it clearly was in international waters at that point. From the beginning of this campaign, the Freedom Flotilla Coalition has been constantly evaluating the prospects for small sailing vessels like Rachel Vittorio and Giuliano II to reach their destination or to return to their ports of origin. In order to increase the international presence in this flotilla, we decided to also have boats that would have a different strategy and final destination. The participants on these sailing boats bear witness to the flotilla and help focus the world's attention not only on Israeli state piracy against civil society activism, but also to the more than 8 years of suffering and arrested development in blockaded Gaza. See ff3.freedomflotilla.org for updates on boats, positions, and itineraries. And yes, that is a feature of the ff3.freedomflotilla.org website, where they have real-time GPS-related, global positioning system-related updates on the positions of all boats, presuming they're able to maintain contact. We were not able to maintain contact with the outside world during almost all of our voyage in 2008. Our two vessels. Because the Israeli Navy, although they did make the decision under pressure, international pressure, to not stop us from entering Gaza, used electronic jamming devices, including one that interrupted any signal that we could send on channel 16, which is the international Mayday frequency, recognized as being for emergencies only, and they still sabotaged our ability to send out a Mayday signal. Well, again, that was 6 years ago. So, getting back to this press release here. Yes. During recent days, political support for our challenge to the blockade has been building in Israel, Israel itself, and throughout the world. The flotilla has for years continuously put pressure on this illegal and inhuman blockade. We are renewing our strategies while staying true to our history of sailing to restore international law in the Eastern Mediterranean. More international figures are standing by, prepared to participate in Freedom Flotilla 3 by land and by sea with one common goal. We will continue until Israel's illegal blockade is lifted, until Egypt stops the arbitrary closures of the Rafah crossing and Gaza's port is fully open for both people and products. Very brief listing of the passengers and crew aboard the Mariana av Göteborg. Swedish flag, 18 people. Dror Feller of Sweden, musician and composer. Basil Gatas of Israel, member of the Israeli Knesset, that's Israel's parliament, and a Palestinian politician, Basil Gatas. Dr. Monsef Marzouki of Tunisia, human rights activist and ex-president of Tunisia. Ana Miranda of Spain, member of the European Parliament, BNG. BNG might refer to her party. I do not know for sure. Nadia Keverkova of Russia, journalist. Kajsa Ekis Ekman of Sweden, journalist, author. Robert Lovelace of Canada, university professor and retired Algonquin chief. Native American there from Canada. Joel Operdos, Sweden, crew. Amir Alhamdan of Norway and Mohammed El Bakali of Morocco, both of Al Jazeera Arabic News Service. Also included in the crew is Ahad Hemo of Israel, Channel 2 Israeli TV, Rouhani Pereira. A couple of people from New Zealand and a few others. So, let's see if I can bring this one up here.
Hello, welcome to the Summer Rise. I'm Roshan Mohammed Salih. The Gaza Strip is often described as the biggest open-air prison in the world, besieged and regularly bombed by Israel on one side and blockaded by Egypt on the other. 80% of the population are now dependent on humanitarian aid. 63% of young Gazans are unemployed and 95% of the water is unfit for human consumption. But now, in an attempt to put the international spotlight back onto the humanitarian catastrophe unfolding there, a group of around 50 international activists are setting sail from Europe for the port of Gaza. As the brutal siege approaches its ninth year, today we'll be discussing the Freedom Flotilla's prospects for success. But first, here's Ashraf Shannon from Gaza with a report on how the siege is affecting ordinary Palestinians.
The sun will rise. Warning, the following video contains me bring that back so I can read it to you.
Daring catastrophe unfolding there. A group of around 50 international activists are setting sail from Europe for the port of Gaza. As the brutal siege approaches its ninth year, today we'll be discussing the Freedom Flotilla's prospects for success. But first, here's Ashraf Shannon from Gaza with a report on how the siege is affecting ordinary Palestinians.
Okay, the title of this video is "The Sun Will Rise, Breaking the Siege of Gaza." Following video contains scenes that some viewers may find disturbing. The visual video, anyway.
The Israeli blockade has caused great suffering for 1.8 million Palestinians living in the Gaza Strip. In place since 2007, the blockade has made unemployment and poverty rates to reach alarming levels. All sectors in the blockaded coastal enclave have been negatively affected, including farming and fishing. But the hardest hit, due to the illegal and inhumane Israeli blockade, are patients who can't find proper treatment in the Gaza Strip. This is the case of Hamza Al-Hadidi, an 8-year-old boy whose leg was shattered in a car accident last year. Israel has denied Hamza an exit permit, preventing him from getting proper treatment abroad.
I go to the outpatient clinic every 2 days, and they only change the bandages. This morning I was there, and soon after I felt so much pain in my leg. I had my mother remove the bandage because I couldn't bear the pain anymore.
Hamza had multiple failed surgeries in Gaza due to lack of medical expertise to treat such cases. His father says only an advanced medical center abroad can help his son.
The doctors told me that Hamza cannot be treated in Gaza. Hamza needs multiple very complicated surgeries and special implants that are not available in Gaza. A German medical team visiting Gaza told me that he needs a very special treatment abroad that could last for up to 9 months.
The air, land and naval blockade of Gaza has been the longest in modern history. As the Israeli blockade draws near to its ninth year, many here say they feel as if the world has forgotten about them and they have no one to turn to amid the international silence. Ashraf Shannon, The Sun Will Rise, Gaza.
To discuss the significance of this new Freedom Flotilla, which is setting sail for Gaza, we have two guests with us today. Zaha Birawi is the coordinator for the International Committee for Breaking the Siege of Gaza. This is a Palestinian initiative to mobilize the international community to act immediately to stop the Israeli siege. And Laura Stewart is a Palestine human rights activist who describes herself as a British Mavi Marmara survivor. That's a reference to the Turkish boat which she was on, which was attacked by the Israeli military in 2010, leaving 10 people dead and more than 50 wounded. So welcome, both of you, to the show today. Thanks for coming in today. Zaha, if I can start with you.
Let me interrupt here to say it is now 1600 hours, that's 4 p.m. Pacific Daylight Time here in Santa Cruz County. You are listening to Free Radio Santa Cruz, broadcasting at 101.3 on the FM dial, and we are streaming live at freakradio.org. That's freakradio.org. If you want to listen online, make sure you click on the listen link or on the red oval on top of the tranny tower there and carefully follow the instructions to receive our live and free streaming link. I'll give phone numbers at the end of this video here from Press TV UK.
Tell me about this latest Freedom Flotilla. Where is it now? What are its plans?
First of all, Roshan, let me say to the Palestinian father and his son that we will never forget them. And we, as International Committee for Breaking the Siege in Gaza and all the alliance in the Freedom Flotilla Coalition, we are working day and night in order not to forget them and in order to awake those who are forgetting them. The Freedom Flotilla Coalition, as you know, started this year from the north of Europe, from Sweden. Early May, they sailed from there to Copenhagen, then to Germany, then to Spain, to France, then to Spain. Yeah. And now they are in the south of Spain, in Mortel port, Today there will be a good celebration welcoming them in that port, and to get ready for the next step. The next step or the next stop will be in Italy, and after Italy we're going far to the east of Mediterranean in order to meet with the rest of the boats. Sure. In order to, depart towards Gaza.
But this isn't going to be easy, is it? Because as we know, Mavi Marmara got attacked in 2010, then there was another attempt in 2012. Also, that was stopped by the Israelis. I mean, what are the prospects of this actually reaching Gaza? Not good, right?
Let me say that we know the difficulties of being on board of such boats.
Yeah.
And we know at the same time that the mission deserves our trial. We must keep trying to break this inhumane siege on Gaza. And we believe that the Israelis, they will act maybe the same as they did regarding the Mavi Marmara or the other, the second flotilla. But that will not stop us from trying. The Israelis are going to be the losers if they try to attack this flotilla again. Mm. Because during the first one, until now, Israel is suffering from what happened in 2010,
yeah.
Politically, I mean, and in their relation with mainly the biggest Islamic country, which is Turkey, and other countries in the world, still criticizing Israel for what happened. Sure. Against Mavi Marmara and the Freedom Flotilla 1.
Laura, you were on that boat, the Mavi Marmara, in 2010. Yes. when it got attacked. I mean, given your experiences, I mean, how do you feel about these guys trying to do it again? Would you go on one again?
I certainly would. I tried to get on the one, I think, the one following that was stopped in Greece from leaving the ports by lawfare, as they call it. I'm not sure how they bribed the Greek government, but they managed to prevent that one from leaving the ports. I was in Istanbul ready to go on that. So, yes, definitely I would go again. I think this is a whole different experience on a little boat like this. I believe they've been pitching and rolling their way around from
what
Northern
kind of people
Europe.
Go on these trips? Are they just pro-Palestinian activists that are very motivated to... I mean, what kind of mindset do you have to go on one of these...
You have to believe in justice.
Missions.
You have to believe that justice is achievable, and you have to believe that the people taking an action where the governments won't, because all of our governments are complicit in the siege and complicit in the occupation. And so we need the people to continue doing this until it reaches a critical mass that can change.
But it's symbolic, isn't it? I mean, the aid that they're actually carrying on the boats is negligible, isn't it? It's more of a publicity stunt to put the spotlight on the siege, right?
I think that they're carrying solar panels, which is very symbolic, because if you know about Nafiz Ahmed, who was sacked by The Guardian for writing about the gas offshore from Gaza and how Israel has made a vow that they'll not allow Palestinians ever to be independent from Israel with electricity, with power, with all of these resources, or to profit from their own resources under the sea.
Okay.
Then you see how our government was helping the PA as well and British Gas to try and make a deal behind the back of the Gazan people, behind the back of the Palestinian people there.
Okay.
So you've got to break through the siege. Who knows? Maybe that's one of the reasons that they don't allow the ship to go.
Pick this up in a few minutes' time, but we're going to move on for the time being. Sorry to cut you off there, Laura. We've been collating the messages that you've been leaving for us on social media relating to the Freedom Flotilla and other recent events in Palestine. So here's Camelia Shambayati with the social media roundup.
Hi, and welcome to our social media roundup. So there's been mass online support for the third Gaza Freedom Flotilla, and his footage of the Scandinavian aid ship Marianne arriving to Portugal en route to Gaza. The ship set sail on May the 10th, along with other boats from Greece, Norway, Italy, Canada, South Africa, Spain and Turkey, in an attempt to bring humanitarian aid to the Palestinian territory and bring the 9-year-long siege imposed by Egypt and Israel to an end. Moving on now, there's been tremendous backlash on social media from Palestinians and their supporters against the Palestine Football Association, who had a chance to suspend Israel from FIFA but backed out at the last minute with the creation of Twitter hashtags such as Red Card Jibril Rajoub and Sold Out Jibril. If we take a look at a couple of tweets, Susie from the UK says, the PA, referring to the Palestinian Authority there, have showed unbelievable weakness by dropping the FIFA bid ban on Israel. The PA are not fit to lead the Palestinians. They deserve better. And even Hamas tweeted from their official account saying, we condemn the PA's last-minute dropping of the bid to ban the Israeli occupation from FIFA. This move is inexplicable, to say the least. Finally, a disturbing YouTube video that was recently uploaded shows Israeli soldiers breaking the arm of a Palestinian activist. According to the International Solidarity Movement, in Beit Umar, just north of Al-Khalil Hebron, Israeli troops broke the arm of local activist Yusuf Abu Maria and then arrested him. Yusuf was protesting with a group of around 30 local Palestinian activists outside an illegal Israeli settlement. And the Israeli forces continue to violently arrest Yusuf, even though his cries of pain were obvious. Okay, that's all the social media news I have for you this time. Please do check out our Facebook and Twitter pages to keep up with the latest on the show.
Zaha, before we talk about the flotilla again, I just want to briefly pick up on the Palestine Football Association not kicking Israel out of FIFA. I mean, they had the votes to do it, didn't they?
Yes.
What happened?
Unfortunately, the Palestinian Authority, they are taking all opportunities to let their people down.
Mm.
And not only the Palestinians have been let down by this decision, but the international community who are supporting Palestine and who were very happy that it is the time for them to kick out Israel from the
Why didn't they do it? Was some pressure put on Jabal Rajoub at the last minute?
Definitely. When a government rolled by individuals like Mahmoud Abbas and his allies, it is easy for the Israelis and the Americans to put the pressure on them and to take the decisions from them as easy as what Jibril has done.
All right, back to the flotilla, because we're running out of time. I want to get as much in this section as possible about the flotilla. So you wanted to say something about the people on board.
Yes, actually this flotilla is supported by many politicians in the world, and we have more than 50, as you said in your report, of the politicians and public figures on board this time. One of them is the former president of Tunisia.
Yeah.
And some other politicians or former politicians from Europe and America. And we have many...
So will they be less likely to attack the flotilla if someone like as prominent as Monsef Manzouki is on it?
We hope so, especially we are calling all the governments, and we started sending some letters for officials in European governments, Arab governments, and to everyone. We believe that they might put some pressure on Israel not to attack this this flotilla. And regarding the aid also, I want to say that the aid we have is symbolic, yes. But that is simply because the mission is not a humanitarian mission or charity mission. Mm-hmm. It is a political message. It is we are requesting in our website and in our communication that we push towards having the Gaza port, Palestine port, to be built, to allow Gaza people to build their boat and to have a safe passage or pathway from Gaza to the West Bank and to lift the siege on Gaza. So it is a political campaign and media campaign to increase awareness about the Gaza situation these days.
Laura, I mean, I know that you'll be a Palestine activist till the day you die, but ultimately, this siege is nearly 9 years old now. I think we're coming up to the ninth year of it. And the focus seems to be on it less than any time before. People aren't talking about it. They're talking about Syria, I don't know, or what's going on in Ukraine. But no one's talking about the Gaza siege. Is that a bit dispiriting?
No, I think it's a good thing. I don't think we should be just talking about the siege of Gaza. I don't think we should be talking about two-state solution. In fact, any organisation that I know that would talk about a two-state solution, I think I would be boycotting them, never mind boycotting Israeli goods. I think now that it's clear that the only solution is for the return of all the Palestinian refugees. So I would prefer to focus on the right of return. And obviously the end of the apparatus of the State of Israel. Mm. And then if the two people live there in peace as they did before. But the land is Palestine. The state is the instrument of oppression. So the State of Israel has to go, and the people can live on the land in peace.
Laura, can I very well put, but can I also ask you personally about the Mavi Marmara case? What is the status of that at the moment? Yeah, they're still looking for some kind of retribution, are they, from the Israeli military or
absolutely.
Or the government?
There was three conditions. One was apology, which Netanyahu did in person to Erdogan. And the second was the monetary compensation, which is for the families. I know some of the families quite well. I mean, that's not an issue. Yeah. And the third was lifting the siege of Gaza. One of the main issues about the ongoing court case is that the judge has issued the arrest warrants for the military personnel. However, those arrest warrants are sitting on the desk at the Ministry of Justice in Turkey and have not been sent to Interpol.
Right.
And it was my hope that Erdogan would win the election with a clear majority so that
he'd be in a position to push this.
Yeah. Yes.
But he didn't.
And the problem is that we have, of course, so many civilians willing to take an action like this, but at state level, the situation is not changing.
It hasn't moved yet. OK, we're going to conclude this discussion in a few minutes' time, but we're going to move on for the time being. We've been collating some of the news from Palestine that you may not have seen on the mainstream media. So, again, here's our quick roundup.
Israeli aircraft have bombed the northern Gaza Strip, allegedly in response to a rocket fired from Gaza that hit southern Israel. The rocket landed on open ground and caused no damage or injuries. No casualties were reported in Gaza either, following the airstrike, which struck a Hamas facility. A Salafi jihadist group, the Omar Brigades, who sympathize with ISIL, claim responsibility for firing the rocket at Ashkelon. They said the rocket was in solidarity with Palestinian prisoners held in Israeli jails and their own members incarcerated in Gaza. An Egyptian's appeals court has cancelled a ruling to list the Palestinian resistance group Hamas as a terrorist organization. Hamas is an offshoot of Egypt's Muslim Brotherhood, which the authorities have also declared a terrorist group and have repressed since the army ousted Mohamed Morsi from the presidency in 2013. Cairo has for many years played a central role in engineering ceasefires between neighboring Israel and Hamas. But it has also been instrumental in tightening the economic siege on Gaza in conjunction with Israel. Palestinians have heavily criticized the Palestine Football Association for dropping its motion asking for Israel to be suspended by FIFA. The motion had been included on the agenda at the FIFA Congress, but PFA President Jibril Rajoub said he had been persuaded to back down. The Palestine FA has accused Israel of hampering its activities and restricting the movement of players between the Israeli-occupied West Bank and the Gaza Strip. And finally, Israeli leader Benjamin Netanyahu has proposed resuming land for peace talks with the Palestinians, but with the initial focus on defining areas where Israel could expand Jewish settlements. Peace talks collapsed in April 2014 over Israeli settlement building in the occupied West Bank and East Jerusalem, and after President Mahmoud Abbas angered Israel by reaching a unity deal with Hamas in Gaza. A spokesman for Mahmoud Abbas said settlement activity must stop and all core issues of the conflict with Israel must be addressed simultaneously.
Zahra, again, I want to pick up on something in that previous report. Egypt has taken Hamas off the terrorist list. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Good news? And why have they done that?
It is a step to the right direction, I think. The Egyptian authorities, they convinced or believed late that they must have some relation with Hamas, because without having the relation with Hamas, there will be no role for the Egyptians in the political process, because Hamas representing most of the Palestinian people, not only in Gaza, in the West Bank also. So 60% or more of the votes gone to Hamas in the our latest election happened in Palestine. That means Hamas is a main player in the political scene in Palestine.
So it's about having influence.
So, yes, yeah. and that reflects the decision of the court, reflects that the court is not only acting as a court, but they are influenced by the political scene in Egypt.
As a Palestinian yourself, I mean, we all talk about the Israeli-imposed siege, but Egypt has been equally as instrumental, hasn't it, in blockading Gaza. And it's got even worse since Morsi was ousted, right?
Unfortunately, Egypt are now part of the imposing the siege on Gaza by closing Rafah crossing at least. I don't want to talk about the buffer zone they created lately after the coup against.
Yes.
But at least closing this is not accepted by all the Palestinians. Unless they are cooperating and benefiting from the siege. Some of the Palestinians, a minority of the leadership of Palestinians, they are cooperating with Egypt and maybe encouraging Egypt to keep this kind of siege on Gaza in order to gain some political gains for their parties or for their selves. Okay, so this is the problem of the siege. The siege is not only Israeli. Yes, it is mainly Israeli, and this decision being taken by the Israelis, as you remember, and everyone remember, after the election in 2006, because the leadership of the Palestinians elected at that time did not please the Israelis or the Americans or their alliance in the region, especially Egypt and the Palestinian Authority. So this is the reason it is unlogical.
But this flotilla is more about, given that it's coming from the sea, and that is not a blockade imposed by Israel, it's more focusing on Israel than Egypt,
yes,
right?
Yes, exactly. Yeah. And this to remind the people that we, as Freedom Flotilla Coalition, we concentrate on the breaking the siege from the sea. Okay, right. But we, as International Committee, for example, for breaking the siege, we are doing convoys, and we used to do many convoys every year until the coup happened in Egypt.
Yeah.
And
now
from that time
until
now, the Egyptian authorities did not allow us to go to Egypt.
And it's practically impossible to cross that border, isn't it, now?
Yeah.
I mean, it's open once every few months now, isn't it, for a few days. Laura, we're coming to the end of the show now, so I guess I just want to ask you, you know, I mean, what's it going to take? It's a big question, this, but what's it going to take to break that siege?
What's it going to take to break the siege?
The end of Israel?
Well, you've thrown me. Was that one of the questions?
But what can we do as activists? I mean, I don't know. I don't want to sound overly pessimistic here, but are the steps that we're taking, you know, so small that we're never going to get to our ultimate goal? Or how do you see the future?
Let him answer that one.
I think it will lead to a good results. This is our hope, and without the hope, we will sit down in our houses and doing nothing. So we hope that we can do something. As I said to you, political campaign, media campaign, increasing awareness about it, and encourage the people to do activities and to pressure their politicians, their governments, in order to do something. Yes, I agree. It is not easy to break it by going to Gaza by three fishing ships.
But
it is symbolic, and it is awakening the people in order to do their duty.
How easy has it been to get the international media attention? Are people interested in this?
Unfortunately, it is not very.
It's tough.
But we are trying. At least when we go from port to port in Europe, we have a big celebrations or welcoming events for the boat, and we have local media and we have social media. So if the main corporate are not giving attention to this, but many of the social media, and it is huge, and I think it is influential.
Okay, Laura, anything else you want to say? Any kind of, just to conclude, you got about a minute left.
I'm glad that they're continuing to try and break the siege by sea to prove to the Israelis that they didn't stop us, you know. But to conclude, I was thinking, I want to be on the ships that take the refugees back one day to their land, because the Israelis chased them. Some of them had to leave by sea as refugees, and I would give anything to be on a boat that takes some of them back.
Inshallah, okay. Will happen soon, inshallah.
Okay, great way to conclude. Thanks a lot for coming in today, both of you. And we will kind of, on this show, we'll try and track the updates of this Freedom Flotilla as it approaches and inshallah as it enters Gaza this month or next month, I guess. Okay, that's all the time we have for today. Once more, thank you to all our guests, and don't forget to get busy, please, on social media telling us what you think of the issues raised in this program. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you again next time for more discussion and analysis on Palestine. Bye-bye.
At least three boats carrying pro-Palestinian activists are preparing to set sail for the Gaza Strip in an attempt to break Israel's blockade of the territory. Members of the Freedom Flotilla Coalition in the Italian city of Palermo aim to reach Gaza before the end of June. However, the boats will only bring small amounts of medical supplies and other aid, including solar panels. The main objective of the flotilla is to open Gaza's port to allow freedom of movement and trade. More details about the plan, including the final departure port of the flotilla, point of the flotilla that is, are kept secret to avoid sabotage. In 2010, Israeli forces attacked a similar flotilla that was trying to reach Gaza and killed 10 Turkish activists. Tel Aviv has imposed a total air, ground and naval blockade on Gaza since 2007. Joining us now from Brisbane via Skype is Max Egan. He's a radio host and political commentator. Many thanks for joining us here on Press TV, Mr. Egan. How important do you think such movements are, like this Freedom Flotilla Coalition, in bringing to attention for the world the plight of the people of Gaza?
Look, I think they're extremely important. In fact, they're one of the only mechanisms we have of highlighting this issue. And, of course, the issue here is trade. The issue is getting the supply lines open. And this was, of course, part of the ceasefire agreement that Israel made with the Palestinians back in the last incursion. They did part of the agreement was to allow a port and to allow trade and to let the borders be open for a while, perhaps even end the blockade. And of course, we haven't seen any of this. It's extremely important that the blockade stops. It's extremely important that these people are allowed to trade. And that, of course, is the main objective of this mission. And that's really all we can hope to achieve with this, is to highlight the plight of these people and to bring attention to the fact that they're not allowed to get the most basic of supplies. And for people to understand that this is mainly a population of children, you know, imprisoned people and mainly children who simply can't get the supplies they need for any type of normal life. And not only that, but they've just been recently subject to a brutal bombing campaign by Israel for 51 days, which has left the place in absolute ruins, and still no medical supplies have got in. So it's absolutely important that this goes ahead.
Right, Mr. Egan, as we've just mentioned here on Press TV as well, and a similar flotilla in 2010 was attacked by Israeli forces and resulted in casualties. 10 Turkish activists died. Are you at all concerned that this risk still exists with regards to this flotilla as well?
Well, of course it does exist. I mean, Israel's been known to do this with the last flotilla that attacked them in international waters. It's very likely to do the same again. And if it does so, will we see any prosecution towards Israel? We certainly haven't in the past. It seems to be able to get away with anything it wants to do with complete impunity. So hopefully we won't see that, but it wouldn't surprise me at all. It is a great, great danger. The people that are going on this flotilla are very, very brave people, highlighting a very, very important cause, and they're putting their lives on the line. And we've seen before that Israel will leave no, you know, holds barred in what it does to stop this. So it's a very dangerous mission. Hopefully world attention will focus on it, and hopefully more people will get involved, you know. We don't want to see this. We don't want to see people get hurt. But again, we can't just leave the people in Gaza the way they are. I mean, if you're any type of a humanitarian at all, you want to go in and help. And this is all the only really hope we've got. I mean, we can't get there by road. The only way in really is by ocean. And so that's the best attempt, and that's what they're trying to do. So best of luck to them.
All right. Best of luck indeed. That's radio host and political commentator Max Egan joining us via Skype from Brisbane. Mr. Egan, thank you very much for your comments here on Press TV.
Okay, folks. You heard all of that. That was an additional, slightly shorter than 4 minute. A second video track that I was playing, or audio track to a YouTube video here at the end. And as you heard the gentleman from Brisbane, Australia, whom you just heard say, one of the agreements that Israel agreed to following the carnage of its 51-day destruction of virtually the entire Gaza Strip last summer, 2014, one of the conditions was that Israel would allow the port of Gaza to be open for commerce and trade. Commerce and trade are two of the intentions of the Free Gaza Movement and this current Freedom Flotilla 3. And again, certainly nothing that Israel could practically find objectionable. of FF3 there in terms of what they might bring in, etc. The situation could be seen, one possible explanation, as a rogue military, Israel's navy running amok, although it's, if that's a proper explanation, it's been doing it consistently for 6 years now, stopping all but the first half dozen or so sailings into the Gaza Strip. And then Operation Cast Lead happened in 2008 to 2009, and ever since then, not a single vessel, not a single freedom sailor has made it into the Gaza Strip by sea. Israel is breaking its agreement as part of the armistice for the 51-day slaughter there. First, they cause this tremendous damage, generate over 100,000 newly homeless Palestinians, a tenth of a million Palestinians made homeless by the bombing of their former homes and apartment buildings, and general havoc wreaked upon the infrastructure there, and of course over 2,200 deaths primarily non-combatants, almost all of them non-combatants. And on top of all that, they lie. Israel makes agreements that they obviously have no intention to keep, and one of them, as the gentleman from Brisbane was saying, was that Israel will open the ports of the Gaza Strip to the outside world. And they're still utterly refusing to do that. Truly incredible how this, how rogue the whole Zionist operation of Israel really is in reality. Let me go ahead and give the phone numbers now. It's just almost half past four. If anyone has any thing they want to talk about regarding this, regarding the Freedom Flotilla 3, the whole Free Gaza Movement, Gaza in general, or anything else you want to talk to me about, two lines to the studio here in Santa Cruz County, California, on the Central Coast. Area code is 831 for both lines. Area 831. Line number 1-427-3772. Again, 427-3772. Line number 2 is 469-3119. 469-3119. You can go to our website at freakradio.org. Click on the contact link, and lo and behold, you'll find our numbers there as well. To remind you, to refresh you, in case your radio sputtered out while I was giving the digits just now. And okay, I'm checking my listenership here. Looks good. This is Free Radio Santa Cruz, 101.3 FM, streaming live at freak, as in freakradio.org. The phone lines are open and the ringers are on. Now's your chance, folks. Get in. Be the first on your block. Get ahead of the crowd here, ahead of everyone else who might decide a little later than you that you want to talk to me. And my name is Ren, by the way, R-E-N, short for Lawrence, as in Lawrence Afif Tawil. This is the Mideast Migraines weekday program. Comes to you every Monday at 3 p.m., 1500 hours. Likewise, there is the other, the alternate, separately produced Mideast Migraines program, still with yours truly here, every Saturday at 11 a.m. 11 o'clock in the morning on Saturdays. I'm currently reading Christopher Bolin's Solving 9/11, The Deception That Changed the World. I think I'm in the middle of, I think I just started chapter 5 on that. And fascinating material. A lot of it's very dry, but that's because it's utterly fact-based and names a lot of names, probably none of whom, or very few of whom, are names that would excite anyone out there, not names that you would recognize, but it's important for Bolin to flesh out the connections of who was responsible for what and how it pertains to the September 2001 attacks on New York and Washington, D.C., and, of course, that attack on Shanksville, Pennsylvania. That's the Saturday edition, weekend edition, Saturday, 11 a.m., right here on Free Radio Santa Cruz. Freak Radio for Central California. We've been liberating the airwaves for 20 years now, since 1995. I myself and all the other programmers pay regular dues to the cause in order to produce our programs and get them on the air. Monthly dues, and of course, this is something we cannot require of our listening community, but we can ask you, please consider donating to this underground pirate, the good guy kind of pirates, strictly grassroots community radio service, not licensed by the FCC. We do not want the undue corporate influence affecting our editorial stance or the content of our programming. Therefore, we are a pirate radio station, Papa Pirate Radio Station. Please send check or money order, check or money order only to this address, FRSC, for Free Radio Santa Cruz. You just have to write FRSC, Post Office Box 7811, Santa Cruz. Now, that's two words, S-A-N-T-A. Cruz is spelled C-R-U-Z, California, or C-A, zip code 95061. Again, you can find that address on our donate link on our website, freakradio.org, but I'll give it to you again anyway. Write to, address the envelope, and make the check out to FRSC. That's good for the check, but for the rest of the address is P.O. Box 7811, Santa Cruz, California, 95061. We also have a PayPal donations mechanism on our website under the same donate link. So there's that. Let me see. There are so many. What do I do with my glasses here? Here's a bit of a conversation dated about 2 weeks ago, actually. These are comments on The Sun Will Rise, the video that you heard the entirety of a few minutes ago here. Mary Hughes Thompson, one of my former shipmates from 6 years ago. Very enjoyable and interesting video. Must say it saddened me somewhat that there seemed to be no acknowledgement that the siege was actually broken by the very first flotilla, our two little boats, Free Gaza and Liberty, in 2008. Our boats were the only ones to reach Gaza, and if not for the Free Gaza movement, it's likely Gaza would still be unknown to much of the world. We are proud to have opened that door so that others with bigger budgets and bigger boats could follow our lead. I know all of us who were privileged to reach Gaza port in August 2008 wish smooth sailing and safe landing to this new group of freedom sailors. I feel sure our two dear departed shipmates, Sister Anne Montgomery and Vittorio Aragone, are wishing them Godspeed. Donna, whom I met first associated with the Free Gaza movement and was shipmate with, and also happens to be one of our excellent radio programmers here at Free Radio, says, "Yes, Mary, not only did the Free Gaza and the Liberty reach Gaza port in Gaza City, the first time that international ships arrived to the shores of Gaza in at least 41 years, if not since 1948, but the Free Gaza movement continued to send the Dignity, one of our ships, one of the first ones, to Gaza with many delegations of VIPs, another four successful boat trips breaking the siege blockade collective punishment by the apartheid war criminal Israeli government, backed up by the war criminal U.S. government." And she capitalizes all those words, apartheid, war criminal U.S. government. Gaza was a major trading area for centuries, and the Palestinians in Gaza were fishers and traders throughout the Mediterranean, and especially with Cyprus and Crete, and I think Greece too. It has only been in the recent times, since 1948, that they have been denied their rights to fish and travel via the sea. Via the sea. I think it is horrible that Free Gaza movement has been left out of this and is not being mentioned at all. The organizers were instrumental in organizing Freedom Flotillas 1 and 2. Okay, what's she talking about here? Greta Berlin, who I interviewed shortly after the beginning of the year, I think, is one of some half-dozen founders of the original Free Gaza movement, and a shipmate of mine as well. I saw her for the first time since my trip 6 years ago. Just a little bit ago, we went up to Oakland, Donna and her sister Darlene and I, to meet up with her and attend an event. And as Greta explained, the original Free Gaza movement has been effectively usurped primarily by some Israelis. And as Greta explained it to me, she thinks that these individuals are plants by the Israeli government. Now, so far, I have come across nothing to indicate a difference in the behavior of the Israeli military towards this the Freedom Flotilla boats and previous sailings that were more directly under the control of FGM. Nothing to mark a distinct policy change or change the norm in terms of how the flotillas attempt to reach the shores of Gaza and they're stopped by Israel on the process. So I don't know about this plant thing, but Greta, quite frankly, was quite bitter in her explanation of how the movement has been taken over by certain moneyed people. Some of them who are Jewish and are Zionist, which is really weird. I mean, on the one hand, you see the whole thing about being a Zionist, and in particular, a resident Jewish Zionist citizen of Israel, actually living in Israel, is that I think there's a general assumption that they're all at least partly militant or approaching militant, if not all-out militant, in their wish to claim the land of Israel, or Eretz Israel, as you'd say in Hebrew, and in ethnically cleansing the land of all its non-Jewish inhabitants, which is to say Palestinian Arabs, be they Muslim, Christian, or anything else. Of course, relatively small percentage of the Palestinian population going back 100 years ago, 150 years ago, beginning of the 20th century, they were literally no more than 1,000 Jewish Arabs in Palestine. At least that was the case in Jerusalem. Now, of course, those were primarily the continuous population of Jews from time immemorial, as they say, who have maintained their presence there. But they, of course, would have been incorporated into the Jewish state of Israel, as opposed to the Muslims, Christians, Zoroastrians, and the various other, not to mention atheists and agnostics, Palestinians, who have been, as far as Israel could make it possible, kicked out of that land since 1948. And ethnic cleansing, folks, the term that was used widely in the 90s when Yugoslavia was in the initial throes of its breakup as a single contingent republic. Now there is no more Yugoslavia, and a lot of ethnic cleansing took place where the military began to feel its oats and decide that, no, you can only be Serb here, you can only be Croatian here, blah, blah, blah. And yes, I suppose there were some Muslims, primarily in Bosnia and Herzegovina, who may have also acted like that with a degree of ethnic cleansing. But that's, you know, this is no different. Israel has committed the same war crime, the same crime against humanity, in this consistent 67-year-old policy, and it is a policy, both officially and de facto policy of ethnically cleansing what they consider to be the land of Israel, of all non-Jewish peoples. So anyway, there are these, the question was, almost got completely away from it there, how can one be a Zionist in Israel and not be wholeheartedly pro the ethnic cleansing policies, and not be wholeheartedly in favor of the Judaization, is the term, of Palestine into Israel? That's because there is a history of Zionists who supported emigration of Jews into its new homeland in the world, who consider themselves to be moderate Zionists, who had a preference for dialogue with the native Arabs who were not Jewish. This is true even to this day, there are Zionist Jews in Israel who consider themselves to be liberal Zionists. Those are the ones who are more likely to claim their active personal occupation of the land and their residency in the land of the Jews, but put at least as much of an emphasis on the rights of Palestinians who were there continuously and constituted an overwhelming majority compared to the Jews in Palestine for a very, very, very long time. And so the situation that Greta was trying to describe to me, from what I could make of it, was that there were these guys, some of whom were Swedish Jews, who had ties to Israel, and they essentially usurped the movement, the Free Gaza movement. They had huge dollops of money, and Greta Berlin got squeezed out of it somehow. There was this terrible, stupid accusation of her being an anti-Semite because someone apparently had determined that she was looking at something on Facebook that was considered to be anti-Semitic. Now, no one knows what Greta's motivations were for looking at that. It could have been purely academic exercise and looking at the kinds of problems that we in the Free Gaza movement also have to come up against. We do not welcome anti-Semites to support the cause of sailing into the Gaza Strip. We do not welcome their help, at least when they are clearly outwardly anti-Semitic in their outlook and their philosophy. Yes, it's true that perhaps many of the donations that we've received have come from people who are fundamentally anti-Semitic, but they simply never admitted that to us. But that's pure speculation. So here in the course of today's program, I've been going on and on about how the Free Gaza movement has done this and that, and FGM is responsible for all this stuff. It was initially. But I apologize for putting such an emphasis on FGM. It slipped my mind that we are not FGM. When I say we, I'm referring to the people I was involved with 6 years ago in my sailing. FGM is not the primary force here behind this particular movement. It may be the Zionist usurpers, Swedish Jews, as I described earlier, who have effectively taken over the movement. To what ends, we're not sure. But there are more. Apparently, there are several concerns from different countries. As it was mentioned, 17 different nations are represented amongst the crew and passengers. So I think there's a bunch of separate entities in there. Let me finish this, and then we'll wrap up our program for today. In addition, instrumental, okay. Donna continues to say here, in addition, many of the passengers from the first boat trip in August 2008 remained in Gaza, including Donna herself, I might add, for a time, and reestablished the International Solidarity Movement, and were very successful in posting videos to YouTube documenting the illegal Israeli occupation forces attacking unarmed Palestinian fishers and farmers who were doing their utmost to provide a livelihood for their families, but were denied that right, being shot at, sometimes wounded, sometimes killed, by weaponry paid for by U.S. taxpayers. Yes, Donna, ever the militant herself, but I love her to death. Okay, and a response again from Mary. Thank you, Donna. We know what we did. Without our two little boats, without our stubborn determination to break the blockade, before there was Facebook, before there was Twitter, before most people around the world had heard of Gaza, our motley band of brothers and sisters from around the world put our hearts and our hopes and pooled our hard-earned money to buy food and water and fuel for our two ramshackle little boats. I still don't know how we did it, but we did it. You were one of those who stayed in Gaza, Mary points out, speaking to Donna here, to continue witnessing and reporting on the hardship and suffering the Palestinian people of Gaza were experiencing because of the siege. Like me, you sailed with the fishermen, were attacked by IDF gunboats, I'm just having a memory blitz here of the whole thing. From what I'm reading, like me, you sailed with the fishermen, were attacked by IDF gunboats. We can all be proud of what we accomplished that day, that we landed at Gaza port, and even more proud of what has happened since because of what we did then. Like me, I am sure you applaud this latest effort and wish them success and a safe landing. We really don't need their acknowledgement, but it would have been nice to hear it. And Donna chimes back to Mary. Of course, I support Freedom Flotilla 3, and I really want them to succeed to arrive to Gaza. It is important to include the whole history and not just part of it. The idea of sailing to Gaza to break the illegal siege started in 2006, and it took us until 2008 to make it happen. Also, Free Gaza Movement always prioritized that we were sailing to break the siege. It was never about bringing aid. I think it is awesome that Freedom Flotilla will be returning with products made in Gaza, returning away from the Gaza Strip to enable and encourage trade with the Palestinians in Gaza without apartheid, war criminal, Israeli intervention. Donna, yeah, folks, I wanted to let you into this short conversation here between two of our founding members to remind you all that we are indeed human. We do not hate the Jews. It serves no purpose to actively hate those of a particular religion or ethnic group. Donna, Mary, myself and the others simply recognize that regardless of how the occupier identifies themselves and blames so much of the rest of the world for hating them back or for hating them, doesn't change the fact that they are illegal occupiers, that they engage in land theft, in ethnic cleansing that generates hundreds of thousands, now millions, of refugees and their children outside of the country. That was, in fact, Israel's purpose back then. And there you go with that. One of the reasons that today's program has a rather distinct lack of finesse in it today is because I was engaged in sending messages off to Secretary of State John Kerry, beseeching him to apply pressure to Israel. Initially, my initial intention was to get him to prevent Israel from attacking the Marianne and the other boats. And then I changed the wording of it at the last minute when I finally figured out how to get the message to him on the Internet to demand that Israel release all those kidnapped passengers and crew of the boat immediately, etc., etc. So I was engaged in a lot of that, sending messages to my senators, trying to get in touch with the Israeli consulate in San Francisco, etc., etc. That took a big chunk of my time that normally is dedicated to prep time for this wonderful radio program, this almost miraculously produced and aired program, Mideast Migraines, presenting what is clearly the truth of the matter. It's end of our show time. Join me next Monday at 3 p.m. in the afternoon, 3 o'clock on Mondays. And, of course, the book reading by author Christopher Bolin about solving 9/11 on the Saturday, the weekend edition of Mideast Migraine, Saturday, 11 a.m. Thank you and ta-ta.